Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to be back. We've been traveling, we've been sick, we've been otherwise traveling and sick and otherwise engaged, but it's good to be back. Going out worldwide on the World Wide Web to a global audience, of which you are a very important part. Thank you for tuning in. We want to start this week with a preview. I plan to do a compendium, I suppose, a report on the fathers of the cult that has seized civilization. That's right, it has parents, but no mother, just fathers, oddly enough. Anyway, we're going to do a compendium report on John Money, Alfred Kinsey, Volkmar, Sigusch, Magnus Hirschfeld, and Erwin Gorbrandt. And we appreciate the efforts of the folks over at the Daily Wire and the gentleman's name with the beard, who I can't remember his name, which is very embarrassing. Matt Walsh. I want to thank Matt Walsh, because I've talked about a number of these folks individually here and there, but I plan to put something together all in one place because it needs to be addressed, because we need to know who the enemy is if we're going to effectively defeat, destroy, and kill the enemy, which this must be killed. And so just look forward to that here in the not-too-distant future. In the meanwhile, we'll go to the Real Religion file, where we go to Pakistan, where Norman Asghar is a 24-year-old Christian, and he was recently convicted of blasphemy. He was convicted of blasphemy for receiving cartoons about Mohammed on his phone. He received images of Mohammed on his phone. Now, the cartoons of Mohammed were sent to him by a Muslim, but the police did not arrest the Muslim. They arrested the Christian. And they have sentenced they haven't sentenced him yet, but the blasphemy charge does carry the possibility of the death penalty. And unlike America, in Pakistan, where Christians are involved, the possibility of the death penalty is quite often followed up with the reality of the death penalty. Anyway, observers say that the arresting of the Christian, but not the Muslim who actually sent the offensive images of Mohammed, raises questions about the fairness and consistency of the judicial process in Pakistan. Yeah. The selective targeting of Christians and the failure to investigate Muslims raises concerns about the fairness of the investigation and the trial. And cases like this are what a president and an ambassador are for. Presidents and ambassadors, at least in America, at least traditionally, have been pretty much figureheads, because America is governed by the rule of law and the Constitution and kind of just a civil agreement that we all can tolerate one another. The president and the various ambassadors are figureheads, and this is what they're for. The president should be on the phone with Pakistan saying, you know, until this stops, everything stops. Every benefit that Pakistan reaps from any relationship you have with America stops until this stops. But That's not going to happen because, unfortunately, as I said earlier, America's been seized by an insane cult of deviant perverts. Communists, Islamists, anything-ist except what America, what the American ideal that we were founded upon. Anything that stands in opposition to that, any ism or ist that stands in opposition of the American ideal is being carried off now officially in the capitals of the various states and Washington, D.C. And while that's going on, and the criminally insane pile of perverts continues to pile up, out in the real world, Iran is on the cusp of testing their first nuclear weapon. Just as the Obama administration engages in secret negotiations aimed at securing an altered version of the 2015 nuclear accord, the Obama-Biden administration is promising Tehran billions of dollars for restrictions on its nuclear program. They're working on an altered version of the 2015 accord. Altered in the sense that more of the negotiators on our side are on more drugs and more obsessed with creepy pervert sex stuff than the previous negotiators of the previous Obama administration, the drugs and the perv and all of that. That's going to be the altered state, is that. Now, the Iranians, who are not on drugs, are happy to play along as long as everyone is molesting boys and moving toward Allah's communist vision of utopia. And that's what stands between us and their utopian hellscape in 1,000 years of darkness. It's the negotiators of the Obama-Biden administration, oddly enough. Not to make anyone nervous about the future of civilization, but there you have that. Meanwhile, we go to Portland, where, let's see, Blake David Hampe pleaded guilty to stabbing a black live streamer during the 2020 BLM Antifa riots. Blake is a skinny, pale white kid. He's pleaded guilty to stabbing a black guy at the riots in 2020. He's pled guilty in a plea deal. He will serve no prison time. His original felony charge was downgraded. He was recorded on videotape stabbing Andrew Duncombe. Duncombe narrowly survived the attack. Did I mention he was black and that the guy with the knife was white? I did mention that. Well, the case dragged on for nearly 3 years, during which time Antifa in Portland intimidated the victim, the guy who'd been stabbed, Andrew Duncombe. That's right. They targeted him at his place of employment. They harassed him at grocery stores and eventually successfully got him fired by claiming he was a white supremacist. Did I mention he was black? I think I did. Did I mention that his blood was red? I believe that was implied. So Hempy, the pale, skinny, white communist, he should have been shot by police at the riot. That's what should have happened. Barring that, he should have been put to death for attempted murder, for stabbing the black guy during the riot. But instead, he will be the example to the next wave of insurrectionists the next time a criminally insane sex cult that sees the government, the next time they decide to unleash a wave of violence upon us, he will be the example that the violence will be built upon. And so that's that side. That's the criminally insane side who rules right now. in America and throughout Western civilization in general. So let's go to the alleged other side, where we check in with the headliners from the Fake and Fairly Dumb conference, which is going on this or has been going on this weekend. You may know it as the Faith and Freedom Coalition. It's actually the Fake and Fairly Dumb Coalition, where a bunch of posers get up and pretend that they remember what it means to be American and they remember what it means to be conservative, and they're just fake. In fact, one of the headliners was Mike Pence, one of the fakest of the fake. And he was also on Fox News this past week, where he says he believes a 15-week abortion ban is a winning issue for the Republican Party in the 2024 election. Pence commented in an interview with Shannon Bream, who is a robotic, vacuous, empty bowl of hairspray, who hosts a show for Fox News called Fox News Sunday, apparently. That's, yeah, Shannon Bream, I guess. Almost as vacuous as Mike Pence. Mike Pence said to Shannon, quote, "It's so much more important than politics to me, but." So Mike Pence is saying the issue of the life of an unborn innocent person is more important than politics to him, but, because there's always a but with Mike Pence. He says, but I also think it's a winning issue, which gets down to what's really important to Mike. At the annual Fake and Fairly Dumb Coalition, Pence said the following, quote, "Let me say from my heart, the cause of life is the calling of our time, and we must not rest, we must not relent, until we restore the sanctity of life to not the children." Oh, you would expect him to say, until we restore the sanctity of life to those being killed. Or just stop at restore the sanctity of life. You could just stop there, Mike. But that's not. He goes on. He says we need to restore the sanctity of life to the center of American law in every state in this country. Then he said some children less than 2 months old can be killed, but those more than 2 or so months old, and he's open to negotiation on that, but he thinks 15 weeks is a pretty good place to cut the baby in half. He says, you know, babies 2 or so months, you know, let's write some rules about all that with reasonable exceptions, you know, exceptions that other members of the party or I might use when and if one of my daughters gets pregnant or one of my granddaughters. But let's write these exceptions to... We'll fully bamboozle all the gullible evangelicals and all the compromised Christians just enough to win me or, well, I mean, it could be me, it could be another member of the party, it could be whoever I have to get down and bow down in front of and whoever's ring I need to kiss to be president. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. So yeah, that's pretty sad when Mike Pence wants to stand on top of a pile of children, bodies, upon the top of a pile of bodies of the children to whose murder he has consented in order to be president. And that is allowed to stand up at the fake and fairly dumb coalition. Just embarrassing. I mean, the other side is criminally insane. We know exactly where they stand. In fact, let's go. But Mike Pence is worse. He's way worse. He's worse than what I'm about to. I'm about to quote a story about some sex pervert crazies marching through the streets here. From the Daily Caller, marchers convened at Tompkins Square Park in the East Village in New York City, where you'd think they would be. You would expect a bunch of creepy perverts in the East Village because it's the East Village. Well, they were marching down the street chanting, quote, "We're here, we're queer, we're coming for your children," unquote. So they're allowed to march down the street and say that out loud in public because they're in the East Village. So they marched from Tompkins Park, Tompkins Square Park, to the Stonewall Bar, where the Stonewall riots took place in 1969, and they chanted like a bunch of demonic, demon-possessed maniacs. "We're here, we're queer, we're coming for your children." Right? By the way, Stonewall should be condemned as a riot. And all the faggots who were involved should have their names blotted out from all of history. They should have been arrested. Many of them were. They should have been beaten with billy clubs. Many of them were. They should have been. But their names have not been blotted out throughout all of history. Instead, they've been hailed as the founding fathers of the LGBTQ movement, which it is a movement of sorts. I would agree with that, but let's just move on from that. Instead of having their names blotted out, now the governor in Montana has to actually behave as if they legitimately contributed to the politics of modern day America. Because instead of having their names blotted out in Montana, the governor merely whispers very quietly that drag performers shouldn't be reading books and grooming children at locations that receive public funding. We have to draw the line somewhere against child molesters. Let's draw it, at locations that receive public funding. And this passes for conservative governance. Uh-huh. And meanwhile, the lawyer running Florida, he says that, he's upset that children were spotted at an explicit Orlando Christmas-themed drag show back in December. And by golly, he's taking steps to quite possibly take away their liquor license. We reported on this last year. So this passes as conservatives fighting for our children. They just want to keep the trannies out of the bars that the children are invited to. And anyway, revoke their liquor license. How about you want to talk dirty and be a creep around children? How about we revoke your life? That's right. That's right. Corrupting and molesting children is a death penalty offense. How about that? You know, the millstone verse in the Bible that you've read the verse, or maybe you've heard about it, that corrupting a child, it's better that a millstone be tied around your neck and you be cast into the sea. That millstone verse is a prophecy. It's not an allegory. The millstone will be cast at some point. Forget who shall cast the first stone. When God starts judging, he'll cast the first millstone. And all these people, it's going to be tied around their necks. And it's the obligation of the government, who sits in the place of God, to judge rightly and put to death anyone who would corrupt children and molest children. Anybody who invites a child into a bar for a creepy, weird sex show should be executed. Should put on trial and put to death for creepy, sick behavior like that. That's conservatism. Not revoking their library card. It's ridiculous. And because even conservatives seem intent on tolerating a certain level of the most vile deviance. Well, now the kids are in the crosshairs and being consumed by this demonic, wicked exploitation and victimization. We've got the CEO of something called Discord, which I don't know what that is, but it is a chat program for gamers, which I think that's the biggest thing in the world now is video games. Or what do they even call them anymore? I don't think they even call them video games anymore. It's beyond all that. Well, this site, Discord, is where gamers go to chat about gaming, which that's like their whole life. So it used to be a public square. You'd meet at church on Sunday and everybody would talk. Now the gamers go on Discord and they talk. And the CEO there has finally admitted, or he's voicing his alarm about the rampant child abuse and exploitation and grooming and all kinds of other perverted, sick, creepy stuff that goes on at Discord. The CEO, Jason Citron, stated that reports of child exploitation on the platform are horrifying and that he takes the issue, him and everyone else at Discord, they take the issue very seriously, and he just wants everyone to know how very seriously he takes it. He says, as a parent, which he alleges that he is, he says, it's horrifying. We take this stuff very seriously. Uh-huh. Yeah. Stuff? You call it stuff? Okay. So you're a degenerate pervert. This guy running this, he should be arrested. So what's going on his website? Or is it a website? I don't know what to call it anymore. On his forum. What's going on there is well documented. I can't even get into what goes on there because you can't say this stuff. But people at his company know what's going on there. And the fact that they're not actively working to stop it means his door should be kicked in and he should be arrested because he's obviously, at the very least, he's facilitating criminal behavior. Since 2015, Discord has been, what am I reading from? Breitbart. Since 2015, Discord has been linked to, I mean, things I can't really say. Abduction, grooming, exploitation, 165 child abuse prosecutions. So the police have had to uncover, the police have used things that happened on this forum in actual criminal cases. So, and I wonder how the police found the information. Did they have to issue a warrant and go in, or did the folks from Discord turn these guys in? Did they turn the perverts in? I'm going to assume that the perverts running Discord did not turn in the perverts that the police eventually prosecuted. The CEO, Jason Citron, who's a parent who finds all this horrifying, emphasized that the company works relentlessly to prevent exploitation on the site. But how would he know? How would he even know what to do? I mean, does he know God? Does he know right and wrong? The CEO, Jason Citron, over at Discord, does he know? Does he even know? I would guess that he doesn't even know right from wrong. And tens of millions of parents are trusting this pervert with their children's minds, which is terrifying. And which is, well, it's one of the reasons you need a government to enforce criminal justice because, you know, parents can't keep an eye on their kid 24/7 and there needs to be some guardrails and there aren't any. And so children are going off into abuse, into corruption, and then sadly an eternity in hell. And for all those responsible and all those who took part and all those who sat by, and for all those who didn't affirmatively take action and actually work relentlessly. You know, people like Jason Citron, the horrified parent. The millstone will be cast, Jason. Yeah, the millstone shall be cast, and your neck will be made available should you not figure out how to do what's right. All right, now, meanwhile, we go back to 2012. We're going to go back in time, about 10 years, when, let's see, a Democrat transgender became the first transgender-identifying person to be elected as a state lawmaker. This happened up in New Hampshire when a tranny was elected back in 2012. Thrilling LGBT activists and thrilling the media, of course, and even titillating enough Republicans that that this pervert became basically a harbinger of doom for America. So this creep pervert represents the ruling class of America far more right now than does, say, let's say Dwight Eisenhower. How closely does Dwight Eisenhower represent the modern day ruling class as compared to, let's see, this guy was born Barry Lawton. Barry Lawton was born Barry, then he became Stacy, and then he was elected as a creepy sicko legislator. He's been arrested on charges of distributing child pornography. So he's now been arrested, finally, for being a creepy perv and basically being the poster boy for the ruling class and the deep state. If you wondered what the ruling class is like, if you wondered what the deep state is like, if you wonder what the vast majority of the Democrat Party is like and a significant plurality of the Republican Party is like, it's like this guy. Creepy perv Barry trading child pornography, getting elected, finally getting arrested, and being fitted for a millstone himself. And it turns out that the creepy, weird, pervert cult that's in charge of America recently pursued an insurrection against a foreign government. That's right, the U.S. government, according to the National Pulse, they mounted an unannounced campaign to undermine former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro and assist his communist successor Lula da Silva back in 2023, according to the Financial Times and anyone else with half a brain and an internet connection who was paying attention to the way they stole that election in 2023 down there in Brazil. These are explosive revelations to anyone who with less than half a brain who doesn't have an internet connection. Yeah, the National Pulse says these are explosive revelations that raise concern with America's own presidential election looming, oddly enough. That's right, the Financial Times has spoken to six former or current U.S. officials, several key Brazilian institutional figures, to piece together the story of how Joe Biden, meaning of course, Alexander Soros and Barack Obama, how they engaged in a very unusual messaging campaign that eventually stole the election from Bolsonaro and handed it to the communists. Behind the scenes, the Brazilian military was warned by the Americans of consequences if it supported Bolsonaro. When Bolsonaro's supporters stormed the Capitol after the election was so obviously stolen, Biden, meaning of course Alexander Soros and Barack Obama, and the far left leaders of Canada and Mexico, issued a joint statement in Lula's support and basically warned everyone to back off. The Western Hemisphere is occupied by the same deranged cult of perverts and communists that installed Biden and Lula right now. And I think the first couple, or I don't know if they're the first couple or the high priest. I don't know. I guess it depends on what they come out as. But that's the aforementioned Barack Obama and Alexander Soros. I am back and glad to have you with us. That's right. They know where they're going, and they're taking as many as they can with them. And we are here standing athwart their plan to corrupt and kill as many people as possible, and we are fighting back affirmatively. As, let's see, we have David Horowitz suggests that it's time we fight back. And Dave's been doing his fair share of work doing that. So, but from the Queering of America file, David Horowitz says, he reminds us that it started out with the idea of, you know, just give them their marriage certificate and let them think they're married, right? But then it rapidly expanded to bake us a cake or else. And then to forcibly taking babies and placing them with, quote, same-sex couples, flooding the education system with literature promoting homosexuality. And then there were the drag shows. And now there's the smorgasbord of transgenderism. On deck, what's next, he asks. We can only imagine. And Mr. Horowitz says, which is why public sentiment may finally be turning against the rainbow jihad. Yeah, finally, right? As I said, I've been hoping that this June might be the June that the fags finally push it too far. And everyone says, you know what? You guys are creeping us out. We're sick of this. That David Horowitz is noticing and hoping for the same, and I'm glad. He says, now is the time for conservatives to press the momentum and fight back against the broadest assault on our values. Well, Mr. Horowitz, first of all, these are not our values. These are just values. What we might have once just called moral values. They're not my values. They're not your values because we're sinful men. We make mistakes and we commit sins and we have our own foibles and problems. So these are not my values. These are just values. Right? And we need to say it. We need to say, maybe we can call them moral values, I suppose, because, I don't know, the society's ruled by lawyers and we have to be very specific. But we need to say it. These are not our values that we're seeking to impose upon you. No, these are values that exist outside of me or you or the pervert who wants to molest our kids. These values exist above all of us. And we merely are responsible to God to enforce these values. Oh, did I say God his values? Oh, wow. Okay, let's say it. Not to put too fine a point on it, not to offend anyone and scare any of the snowflakes. These are God's values. And we are responsible to him to enforce those values. Because these values will govern no matter what. Anyway, let's get back to Mr. Horowitz's article. David Horowitz says, it was once thought that the homosexual agenda was an impervious juggernaut that just grew stronger every year. And indeed, over the past two decades, even a majority of Republican voters expressed acceptance of it. But now, for the first time in years, according to a poll, support for the morality of such relationships has dramatically slid back in just 1 year. Thank heaven, finally. Finally, they've pushed it too far. We need to reassert biblical morality. And by the way, I'm not talking about in the public square. Forget about the public square. There are too many compromised adulterers, porn consumers and fornicators in both parties to ever reestablish anything approaching biblical morality in the public square. The public square is lost. The public square is the public square in Sodom. Forget it. It's gone. Just do it in your own family and in your own circle of influence. Don't be like Mike Pence, where you stand up and say, we're going to cut the baby in half at 15 weeks, and you think now that you are enforcing godly standards. Don't become like that, because that's why Mike Pence is going to hell. That's why Mike Pence is going to hell, because he believes in a God that would cut the baby in half at 15 weeks and say, Mike, you're a great guy. So don't be like Mike. Don't be like Mike. All right. Be more like me and David Horowitz, who, well, at least we're recognizing and have recognized for quite some time that this cult of deviant perverts has to be stopped. And finally, perhaps they've gotten so gross and so sick. But see, that what the Republicans want is to just, let's go back to, we can have some adultery, some fornication, and even some homosexuality and some abortions. You know, just enough for whatever I want or what I like or what I tolerate. Whatever me and my God have made peace with. And see, we can't just go back to that. We need to go back to Eisenhower and even further back. All right. Meanwhile, we go to the Death of Europe file, where across Europe, churches, convents, and chapels stand empty. The Bishop of Antwerp in Belgium told the Associated Press something needs to be done with all these churches, these buildings, as ever more of the once sacred structures are repurposed for everything from shops to climbing walls to, of course, nightclubs. This, and reading this article just reminds me of sometime in the mid-90s, I was living in Denver, Colorado, and I remember watching a television news segment about an Episcopal church that had been built in the 1880s, and it was being converted to a nightclub, which to me at the time, it looked like a gay bar, because it was a bunch of perverts with makeup, guys, with disco lights and a lot of creepy darkness and disco music. And I just remember thinking, surely the end is near. This is around 1996 when I watched this. And it just seems so demonic, creepy, satanic that you could do that at a church. And so when I read this article, I went and looked it up. And that nightclub, that pervy, sicko, demonic nightclub, still open in Denver, very successful. In the 1880s, fake Episcopal church turned into a degenerate gateway to hell now for almost 30 years. So literally generations of perverts have condemned themselves to hell inside that club there. That and now that type of sad, disturbing, creepy, perverted weirdness is, it's the order of the day throughout America and throughout Europe. And so, you know, the devil enjoys desecrating anything that ever, at any time, gave homage to Jesus Christ. And so he'll have his moments in the sun. But the millstone's being fitted. The millstone's getting ready, so... All right. And so, I wanted to comment on the big story of the week was the big story of this past week was the Titan. Well, I'm not sure what it was called. Ocean Gate, the submersible that, it turned out to be extremely submersible, as a matter of fact. Anyway, I just read, I was reading a news article about the sad fate of the people aboard the submersible. And it said the bodies of the crew and the tourists, their bodies may never be recovered, was how the news. And this is how you know you're living in a post-Christian society, is because people say things like that. So, and so the Bible says that their bodies will be recovered someday. Everybody's body will be recovered someday. Revelation 20:13 says, and the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. That's the Bible. So the Bible says everybody's body will be recovered, yours and mine. And then what happens? They will be judged. That's the part that the news media, they want everybody to forget about that. Well, I'm not going to let you forget. All those poor saps in the submersible, all their bodies will be recovered and they will be judged along with you and I. Everybody will get an account. Well, according to the Bible, you give an account for every idle word. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it and not to offend anyone, but every idle word. Speaking of every idle word, let's go out to Senator Scott Wiener in California, for whom the millstone will probably be named. It'll probably be the Senator Scott Wiener Memorial Millstone when it is cast. He has worked on some legislation that will give... They'll give the state of California the right to take away your child and molest that child. That's right. Now, it's dressed up in some legalese, so the California State's Judiciary Committee has approved Assembly Bill 665. Uh-huh. You know what that means out in California? The next bill is 666. This is Bill 665. And it would mean that children as young as 12 will be allowed to check themselves into a state-run shelter with the unconditional approval of their therapist or counselor and without their parents' knowledge. That's right. Sponsored by author, the State Bill 665 was authored by State Senator Scott Wiener and Assemblywoman Wendy Cirillo. Those two, they represent the 1st and 2nd District, the district is alongside the Pit of Hell. The authors claim that their bills will provide mental health services for all children, is what they claim. Mm-hmm. In fact, Wiener says, quote, this bill protects children. It makes children safer. It makes children healthier. Which everyone knows that's what I'm all about. That's why I'm obsessed with homosexuality, because I care so much about children. Yes, he says it's unfortunate that his bill, his love for children, has been caught up in a right-wing outrage machine, says Maria. Anyway, so any pervert therapist or counselor, right, can approve any 12-year-old for a residential shelter. And any possible decision to inform the parents would be left entirely up to the, quote, mental health professional. That means that the perverted child molester who's captured the 12-year-old, it's up to him whether or not to tell the parents that what he's going to do to their kids. This is it. This is House Bill 665. So if that's not a warning, if that's not a serendipitous warning that this guy and the other creepy pervs, they need to be stopped. So we need to stop them here at 665 to keep them from, you know, getting to 666.
Give it everything you got. Oh, you gotta hang tough.
your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen, as we circle third and head for home. We're going to stop at Red Rocks Amphitheater, where I'm reminded for the one of the reasons that I fled the state of Colorado. That's right. There were there were thousands of people attending a Lewis Tomlinson concert at Red Rocks Amphitheater, which is an outdoor amphitheater. Are you familiar with Lewis Tomlinson? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. No? Lewis Tomlinson was part of a boy band called One Direction. Do you have any of those records? Can we? I don't know that they even released any records. Actually, probably not. Not even tapes. Anyway, I was unfamiliar with Lewis Tomlinson, but I am familiar with Red Rocks. And what happened at Red Rocks, by the way, was there was a hailstorm. About 100 people were injured, 7 of them transported to local hospitals with severe injuries as enormous hail fell down on the heads of the concert goers there at Red Rocks. Yes, terrifying footage was posted on social media of people hiding, screaming, crawling under things, and bleeding as they were pummeled by the hail. We had hailstorms at our ranch in Colorado that punched holes through a PVC fence the size of golf balls. It was terrifying. So one thing I was always terrified of, well, two things in Colorado, hail and tornadoes, I thought, and I don't think it was irrational fear. Was this a sign from heaven? Huh? Like the end is near, or maybe that 2000s-ish boy band pop music must be stopped? Is that, was it a sign from heaven, or is it the result of warm air on the ground and cold air overhead merging a mile or so higher than other places, making hail that could actually kill an entire boy band from any era? It could kill One Direction. It could kill Boys to Men. It could kill, can I think of any other boy bands? I can't. The Jackson 5. It could kill any boy band, that hail. So I had to look up the Jackson 5 because I thought maybe that's not a boy band. Maybe they had a girl in the band, but they didn't. So Janet Jackson was never a part of the Jackson 5. It was only the boys. So for whatever that's worth, but trust me, it was the meteorology. It was not a sign from heaven, the hail on the poor people in out at Red Rocks who were first twice victimized. You know, first having to listen to Lewis Tomlinson. By the way, he was a vocalist for New Direction. How do we know that? Because they were all vocalists. Because none of them could play any instruments. And they couldn't actually sing all that well either, but there were electronic effects. And they were able to coordinate dance moves, so they had that going for them. And then came the hail. All right, now we move to the widespread hubris file. Now, this is actually good news. This is one of the most encouraging stories I've seen in the past 3 years. Danielle Smith, Premier of Alberta, Canada, took the bold and unprecedented step of apologizing to unvaccinated Canadians for what all happened during the COVID panic hysteria. That's right. Beyond just an apology, by the way, she issued an apology saying, "I'm sorry, I was wrong." Yeah, she actually made a promise. Anyone who was terminated due to their refusal to take the COVID-19 vaccine, she vowed that they would be reinstated. Yes, this is from Revolver News. "This apology and promise from Ms. Smith sends a powerful message," says Revolver News. "You were all wrong, and everybody knows it." Thanks to her humility, the reporters at Revolver News say Danielle Smith has set a new standard. Her willingness to take responsibility shows that she now at least has the potential to be a good leader. That's amazing. Amazing. Will she be a pattern to others? Will Justin Trudeau perhaps follow her? No. Well, we'll see. We hope they do. We hope they do. In fact, there was another story, and I don't know what I did with it. Perhaps I Anyway, there was a story about maybe I didn't want to do this story because I didn't want to do any more on the COVID because, you know, I'm sick of it and all that. All right, so I'll leave it aside. I couldn't find it, but there was a story about how a bunch of people went to a COVID conference and they all got COVID. And they were all vaccinated. And I just wanted to tell whoever was reporting the article, just stop it. Shut up. Just forget about it. Who cares if they all got vaccinated and they all got COVID? We all got COVID. Everybody got COVID. It didn't matter. None of it mattered. COVID was a bad cold. That's all it ever was. And everybody knows that now. So just shut up about it and stop making political points about it. It doesn't matter. Let's just stop. Just cut it out. All right. Let's get back to serious things for crying out loud. Like here, Dwayne Owen. How about this? From the death penalty file, Dwayne Owen was pronounced dead Thursday, June 15th, after a lethal injection. I can't even say. All right. He was sentenced to death for the March 24th, 1984. He was sentenced to death for the 1984 rape and stabbing to death. The fatal stabbing of Karen Slattery, 14-year-old girl. He was also sentenced to death for the rape and deadly hammer attack 2 months later on Georgiana Warden, a 38-year-old woman. Owen attacked two other women who survived. Of the 290 people on Florida's death row, listen to this from CBS News. Owen was one of the longest held there. So he's not the longest. This guy's been on death row since I was in high school. I'm almost retirement age. I'm at the age now where I'm sitting around talking mostly about my health problems. I was in high school when this guy butchered these women. And he's one of the longest in Florida. It's shameful. It's despicable. It's no wonder your civilization is being taken from you by force when you tolerate this level of evil. So all the governing officials all the lawyers running the country who've decided to tolerate this level of evil, it's their fault that our civilization is being forcefully taken from us. I shouldn't say it's their fault. They're the ones instituting it. They're doing it to us. It's our responsibility, I suppose, at least to some degree, although the governing officials, well, they'll be held to a higher standard. They'll be fitted with a heavier millstone. Anyway, here's some interesting statistics. This murderer, Dwayne Owen, who was gently and softly put to death. Listen to this. The warden made sure that Owen was unconscious before the lethal drugs were administered so that he would be comfortable. Owen didn't use any anesthetic, nor did he make sure the women that he butchered with a knife and beat to death with a hammer, he didn't make sure that they had any pain relief of any kind. He just bludgeoned and beat and stabbed them to death while they were awake and, I'm sure, terrified. And he was put to sleep like a baby. Not only that, I said, interesting statistics. Owen was the 13th person put to death in the United States this year. 13. How many murders were there this year as of June 15th? 26,000. He was the 13th put to death. So I've always said, as Bob Enyart said, I believe he coined the phrase, that the government does not stop the death penalty. When they stop enforcing the death penalty, they merely redirect it and amplify it upon the people. They redirect it and amplify it. They multiply it upon the innocent when they don't enforce the death penalty. Owen was the 13th person put to death in the United States this year. There, up as of June 15th, there were 26,000 murders. So take the number of people put to death, multiply it by 10,000, and then double it. And that's how many murders. 26,000 murders, 13 executions. How's that for a statistical anomaly? Multiply it by 10,000, then double it. We have always said the government, in their failure to enforce the death penalty, redirects and multiplies the death penalty and then inflicts it upon the innocent. And there's the data bearing it out. And then let's see how much time. We're almost out of time. We'll go to the insurrection. The insurrection file, we had a Texas public school teacher, a fourth grade teacher, who squatted in a house in Houston from January until just a week or two ago. They finally kicked her out. Government school teacher Amberlyn Prather and her alleged family, whatever that was, moved into the Houston home in January when she forged a lease. So even after the lease was determined to be a forgery, nobody could get her out of the house. Anyway, squatting incidents have exploded across the country, according to, this is a Fox News story. And according to a lawyer, he advises you to, quote, treat your properties like a business, unquote. And then he gives all kind of advice on security. Basically, the lawyers want you to pay protection money via the security industry. And it makes you wonder how many of the lawyers and progressive politicians have been investing in the security industry over the past 70 years or so while they've been dismantling the previous publicly funded justice system that used to. Now we have security companies and cameras and armed guards. We used to have the justice system. Anyway, I think we should bring a class action lawsuit against the country, all right, in order to pay for all the security services, the cameras and the armed guards and all everything we've had to do to secure our property and our lives and the peace. I mean, since the government seems to only listen to lawyers these days, maybe we should hire lawyers to bring a lawsuit against them for what they've put us through, for crying out loud. In fact, what else do I have here from Vox 5 years ago? There was a ruling from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, he said, regarding people experiencing homelessness. The Ninth Circuit in 2018, the Martin versus Boise decision, they ruled that, They ruled that the government cannot criminalize indigent homeless people for sleeping outdoors on public property on the false premise that said indigents had a choice in the matter, the court declared. So they basically said the reason that these people are bums is that there is no alternative and they have no choice. And somehow people went along with that. A bunch of lawyers, right? So the court basically ruled that insisting that, hey, you need to clean up your act and get a job and get off the streets. That's now, they ruled that was the equivalent of cruel and unusual punishment and that it was based on a false premise that the bums actually had a choice. So isn't that, I mean, that's cruel to imply that someone who's obviously derelict and behaving irresponsible to the point that they can't even keep a roof over their head, to imply that they have no choice in that, to me, that's cruel to say that about that person. Because all you need to do is insist that that person get their act together, and most of those people would get their act together. But instead, we're going to say that you're just a bum and you have no choice because what? You're a loser? Is that what you're saying? Let's see. Do I want to comment on the Putin and Prigozhin story? I find that all very hard to believe. That you're telling me that this warlord or whatever he is, he's a mercenary. This mercenary who has an army of 20, maybe 50,000 men under arms, that he was going to turn and march 1,000 miles to Moscow, and that was some credible threat against Putin. Anyway, somebody's getting played here. Okay, that's all. And all I can tell you is this really proves that this is none of our concern. So, because we don't have no idea what's going on between Prigozhin and Putin and the mercenaries and the Russian army and Kiev, and We have no clue what's going on. Well, and it's none of our business except for the fact that the CIA appears to be deeply committed to getting rid of anyone competing with America in the looting of Ukraine. Because obviously, somebody's been looting Ukraine for like 30 years, and I think it's Americans and Europeans. And Putin was muscling in on that. And this, when the dust settles, we'll see that this was really a spat between two criminal gangs. You know, the criminally insane sex perverts running the West, and the old-fashioned oligarch gangs running the East. That's what this is all about. And by the way, the idea that Vladimir Putin is a threat to the planet and the global order, when he can't even take Ukraine, and he's got to rein in the one guy who makes his military even moderately effective against NATO, and this guy's going to conquer Europe and enslave the world in tyranny. Really, Vladimir Putin and the Russians? Okay. So anyway, if you believe that, got some oceanfront property available, just outside Oklahoma City. Anyway, so I think that's it. I don't know. Oh, here we go. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, another commentary on the sad state of America. I hate to leave you with this, but here you go. A 33-year-old man fell more than 4,000 feet to his death on June 5th out at the Grand Canyon. That death, as I suspected at the time, has been ruled a suicide. He was out on the skywalk, which is a horseshoe-shaped, terrifying-looking thing. I'll never walk out on that thing. Where you hang out with a 4,000-foot drop to the bottom. And when you look at the way it's constructed, there's no way anybody could fall. No, you could only jump, and this guy jumped. And so now lawyers are being hired to concoct suicide prevention messaging around the skywalk there at the Grand Canyon. And so you can see what will happen, right? Eventually, the views, right? Why is the skywalk so popular? Well, there's the view. You can see the view of the canyon, the view of the canyon floor, the view of the canyon walls. So once the lawyers get a hold of it, eventually the views will be completely obscured by warning signs and suicide hotline placards. And eventually the rim of the Grand Canyon will look like, you know, the first five pages of the owner's manual of a screw gun with orange and yellow labels and stickers everywhere, placards, dangers, phone numbers to call. So anyway, this is why we can't have nice things like the skywalk, because... All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio, and thank my extremely attractive audio engineer for her help. And should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.